is four. Wheel, W. Wheel, W-E-A-L. What's that mean, anybody? It means go. Who knows? Okay, Ecclesiastes 4. Oh, is this guy getting kicked off campus, is he? Or are they griping about him? Oh, Mitchell, a lesbian, held the sign. Oh, okay, yeah. Let's see, I saw a guy with a sign, let's see, gay pride is why Sodom fried. That's pretty good. Gay pride is why Sodom fried. That's pretty good. Okay, Ecclesiastes 4, and let's go ahead and pray. Lord, thank you for your words. Lord, I do pray you'd help us to, as we read this sermon here that Solomon gave, I pray that you'd help us to see that what he recognized about life, what he recognized and analyzed about life, we all see the same thing here in many ways. And Lord, I do pray that you'd help us to recognize that if we just look at these events from life under the sun, then we'll get very, very discouraged. And Lord, I pray you'd help us recognize that everything will be set right when we see you face to face. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, remember this is a sermon by Solomon, and he is looking at life from life's perspective. On occasion, he'll mention God, but the vast majority of it is if anybody looks at life just from life, you're going to get depressed, discouraged, bewildered, frustrated, downhearted, all this sort of stuff. And actually get to the point where you just want to live in your doldrums and want everybody to leave you alone, let me grumble and complain and gripe and mind my own business. Okay, and in chapter 2, he's talking about, he's analyzing his productive efforts of life, his constructive efforts of life. Okay, we're building things, you know, planting vineyards, making irrigation system, planting orchards, building buildings, you know, having good music and all that stuff. In chapter 3, he talks about the cycles of life. And then chapter 4, he starts off where he says, "So I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun." So chapter 2 is all the constructive things, and in chapter 4 is all the destructive things, all the oppressions, and that is limitless, all the oppressions that are going on. Now, when I say oppression, I'm not talking about, you know, oh, you know, this race is not getting special privileges and they're downhearted. I'm not talking about special privileges. I'm talking about abuses. I'm talking about, in this context, oppressions, meaning more than anything, being oppressed by political figures. Okay, trying to do something productive in life, trying to mind your own business, and some non-productive, some leech, some bloodsucker who's in a courthouse will try to get some money out of you for no valid reason. That's the oppressions that he's talking about. Okay, and everybody faces it. Okay, if you don't face it directly, you're paying for it indirectly. Okay, through the tax structure. So he's looking at these oppressions that are done under the sun. Now, oppressions as far as political figures oppressing the common man, or the oppressions that occur in a family structure, okay, where, you know, the husband and wife, you know, initially they started in love with each other, then they went, you know, two separate ways emotionally, even though they may be living together. Emotionally, they've gone two separate ways. Their lives feel frustrated, not happy with it, but don't want to part company physically. I knew of a couple down in Rensselaer that had lived married for 35 years, and on occasions they wouldn't talk to each other for over a year. And the way they would communicate in order to have something, if the other one's got to do, they'd write it on a chalkboard in the hall or in the house, and then the other would respond. And that's how it went on. And Ethel was telling me about this couple, and she said that there was almost, they'd without talking to each other for over a year. Okay, and that, you know, the oppressions that people go through is just phenomenal. The heartaches, the frustration, the pains. Okay, they may not part company physically, but emotionally they've parted company. Okay, so he's dealing with oppressions, all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors, there was power, but they had no comforter. Okay, the oppressors and the oppressed neither have comforters. And it's interesting that they don't have any comforters on both sides of the coin there. A lot of times you see the oppressor, the one with the power, the one, the judge, the oppressor, the attorney. He's the oppressor. They got the power behind them. They have purported laws behind them. And all that a law technically is the opinion of a bunch of people. That's all that it is, really. True law is Bible law. Okay, and so these people have no comforter because, you know, they get under conviction on occasion about their sin when it's pointed out to them, if people get to point it out to them, and watch them drop their head when you ask them, "Why didn't you call me?" Don't want to look at you in the eye. Okay, and just deal with it. Oppressors and oppressions. No comforter. For the unsaved to go to a funeral, I don't understand how they do it. I guess that's why they get drunk. It's tough enough for a believer to go through difficult things in life without the comforter, the Holy Ghost. They have no comforter, verse 1, and they're oppressed. How many Chinese people lose things to the government, lose their house on occasion, lose their family structure, you know, totally, and all this stuff, and they've got no comforter, none whatsoever. And that's why so many of them commit suicide. Nico, when we were in Switzerland, in Austria, it was in Austria, Nico and Adena and Jen, I took a walk, and we walked on this got walking to a real high precipice over the city. And man, it was a straight drop down. I don't know how far down, but boy, it was probably 400 or 500 feet straight down. And I just said off the cuff, I said, "Man, this would be a pretty good place to take your life, kill yourself." And Nico says, "Yep, a lot of people do it right there. Jump off right there." Living in Austria, you know, people think, oh, Vienna, all this big fancy stuff, no hope. No hope. I noticed in Austria that the women just seem like they're all just beat up. Witchcraft quite prevalent there. And you just look at the women in their faces and in their eyes, and they just look like somebody has put them through a ringer because of the Catholicism. And in that small town where they used to live, Nico and Adena, there's a star right there on a rock right coming into the town. And that star is symbolism that the witches have blessed the community. Okay, and that's why the oppression they face there is phenomenal. Okay, and you see the power, verse 1, the power is on the side of the oppressor. Now, when you deal with this power structure, the power structure in this context is dealing with political figures more than anything. You know, and to me, I'd rather deal with a petty thief than I would a professional thief. meaning a professional thief that has, quote, law behind them. They're professionals at it. The petty thieves that they throw in jail are pikers compared to them, compared to judges and lawyers and county officials and state officials and Obama and federal officials. These people are professionals at oppressing people. So how does a person feel when they get oppressed like something like this? Verse 2, wherefore I praise the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive. I'd rather be dead. Somebody get their house taken from them because some attorney wants to steal it from them. Okay, and it's not too hard to do for these guys. Or if a big major corporation wants to come through and get rid of these houses and have eminent domain, and then they condemn these houses and people who've lived there for 20 and 30 years, and then they pretend to have a public hearing, all pretense, you know, all put on. America culture is just phenomenal, where the Orientals, they don't hide their oppression. They'll take the gun and put it right under your nostril, and if you don't like it, tough apples. American system is, it's got a PR program where they hide the gun under nice big cloth with a smile on their face, and you don't see it, but yet, and then they'll intimidate you and scare you and do all this stuff, and finally a person gives in, and then they can put the gun away without you even knowing it. But they were ready to pull that anytime they get a chance. And people that push them far enough, they'll do it. So verse 2, he says, man, I praise the dead. Tired of this oppression. And just think, this is coming from a king. Most like, in his case, the oppressor. Okay, verse 3, Yea, better is he than both they, the oppressor and the oppressed, which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. Again, I considered all travail and every right work that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. Okay, you're trying to do the right thing, and people will envy you for it. If you're a guy, you know, on a job, and you get several people working in the same place, and you work hard and try to give your boss an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, the other guys hate you for it. They're getting mad at you. You're making them look bad. Why? You do the right thing and you'll be envied for it. Believe the word of God and try to do what God wants you to do. You know, publicly witness for Christ, and other Christians will hate you for it. They envy you for it. Be jealous of it. Jealous of them. When a man does the right thing, they hate you for it. Verse 4. In Psalms 35, it mentions that the Antichrist and company likes to go after those who are at peace with them. Meaning, a lot of times, people who know the laws or the patriot idea, all they want, a lot of times people want, is just leave me alone. And that attitude is the attitude that they want to get rid of. That is a nonconformist attitude. That becomes the greatest source of enemy to this crowd. You know, if somebody gets in trouble with the law and they can see in the court structures that this is a first-time offense with this person, and they can see that this is probably going to be the last time, they're going to do all they can to get this one as long as they can in a pokey. Keep them tagged in. But somebody who's always constantly in trouble, they keep getting out and they get in trouble again and get out and come in trouble and come back through. Why? Because they're already in the system. You see? And they already know you can control those people. You can't control honest people. And that's the ones they get mad at. That's the ones they go after. So verse 4, you do the right thing, be envied of it. Verse 5, the fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. Like, you know, attacking his own family. Doctrinally, maybe something about the trib. Better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Then it says, then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither, saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity. Yea, it is sore travail. This guy just works himself. This is what you call a workaholic. Work himself to death and work and work. And it doesn't dawn on him. You know, he's just so busy working. All of a sudden, he just keel over. Dead and gone. What's gonna be done with all his work? Government and lawyers. And the devil's laughing, enjoying it. Guy just works. He said, that's vanity. This is a sore travail. Now, in this mind, in this context of oppression, facing oppressions of life, verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. A lot of times when a married couple, the thing that should draw a couple close to each other, so close, is when you go through trials of life, tribulations of life, the oppressions of life, and you draw closer to each other, and one of you are going to be down, and the other one try to encourage that one. And then the next day, it's going to be the other way around. And then 2 days later, it's going to be back the other way around. And then you might get a day where you're both up. And then there's going to be one down and the other one's going to help them up. You see, and that's a constant thing that often goes on. And the thing is you should get close to each other and draw closer to each other. But often what happens when you go through the trouble, you get mad at each other because one's down and you get frustrated with each other. No, that should draw one together. You're in it together. You know, if somebody's caused you a headache, caused you a problem, don't take it out on the innocent one in the home. But that's often what people do. You know, the legal system, they love getting in there and splitting families. And they do it at certain times just to cause havoc in people's lives. Often they'll start the havoc like 3 days before Thanksgiving Day, or about 4 or 5, or a week before Christmas, just to ruin the holiday time period for most people and all that stuff. And they do it purposefully. Okay, so in verse 9, two are better than one. And that's the idea. When you have two people witnessing together, two people out, you know, street work, or three or four, the more, then you can stay encouraged in it. Verse 10 or 11. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? Well, there is an answer for that. Just take a lot of cayenne. That'll help a lot. Okay, but it's self-explanatory. And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. So if you got a third party in there to help encourage. So dealing with oppressions, the oppressions of life. I mean, just if you just go through life, a lot of times people just, they're going through life so fast. You ever walk by someone and they say, hi, how you doing? I was going to tell you I was okay, and they were long gone. Okay, and you look at people and you see a lot of times they hide it. They try to hide their hurts, try to hide their problems, try to hide their troubles, and granted, you know, the one's always got them on their shoulder. You know, he gets tired of hearing all that stuff. But there are, you know, people have got major problems. And a lot of people just keep it inside. If you've read the last Mike Pearl article, the magazine that Mike Pearl puts out, The Cloistered Home, and you read, man, there's one in there about a lady whose husband hasn't even, you know, respect her for years and years and years, don't even consider. And I just think, man, that's so sad. Heartbreaking. And the lady's got no hope. and supposedly in a good homeschool Christian family. And that's all across this country. Okay, and it's just very, very sad what's going on. Verse 13, he says, better is a poor and a wise child than an old and foolish king who will no more be admonished. Now notice what is connected with foolishness. Someone who will not be admonished. They will not. The modern word for that is teachable. Someone who is not teachable is a fool or is foolish. I don't care how old a person gets. God is always going to be showing us something. And a person should be teachable. You see, the athlete that quits growing is an athlete that is not teachable. I see some kids, sometimes obviously played basketball for years and try to give it, you know, just to encourage some to, you know, try this, try that. And they say, I know. When I hear that about two times, I quit saying anything. They're not teachable. They know everything. Even though they can't tell their right hand from their left hand, you know, as far as playing basketball, well, I know how to do it. Then show me. You see? Not teachable. Not teachable. And that's foolishness. And we ought to be willing to be taught about anything in life. He says, a foolish king who will no more be admonished. Not taking any advice from anybody. Don't tell me I know what's going on. Now, granted, you know, if it's a young one trying to give advice to an old one, an elderly person, you are, or somebody, you know, 5 years of their senior, 10 years your senior, you almost want to look at them and say, child, go play in a nursery. But even at that, you can learn from anybody. You can learn from anybody. Okay, but, you know, if it's constructive criticism, you ought to be able to take it. Okay, so verse 13, a sign of foolishness is not willing to learn. Not willing to listen. Not being teachable. Verse 14, for out of prison he cometh to reign. Whereas also he that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. Now the one that came out of prison to reign was Joseph in Genesis, end of Genesis. Okay, and then he that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. Yeah, born with a silver spoon in their mouth, and they don't know how to handle things. And they get on their own, they lose it. And they think, oh, I had an endless supply of cash when I was in the kingdom. While I'm outside of the kingdom, reality sets in. Verse 15, it says, I considered all the living which walk under the sun, with the second child that shall stand up in his stead. There is no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this is also vanity and vexation of spirit. There is no end of all the people. You most certainly can say that about China. I mean, they're just everywhere. And my sister says, you know, the Chinese culture is a very unusual culture. Wherein our culture, especially for country folks, you know, the way I was raised, a good neighbor's at least a quarter mile down the road. Okay, and better to be a half mile down the road. But we like our space. And the Bible encourages that too, where Isaiah 5 verse 8 says, woe unto them that lay house to house. But what the Chinese do is they got to be all crammed together. And like in the mountains, what they'll do is they'll have this mountainside where they have their land, and then everybody crammed together in one little community, and then they go out to their land. Instead of having land and a house, land and a house, land and a house, they're all packed together in a village of some type, and then they walk out to their little piece of property. And that's how they are. Man, you got no privacy. I know a couple that was in China, and the lady, she just got so tired of people always at their house. I mean, they had no privacy. They'd be looking in the windows or seeing what them white folk are doing now and this and that. And finally, they had to come back to the States just to get some sanity, just to get away from people. But you see, when you're in that Chinese culture, that's their mindset. Okay? And so, you know, in our culture, especially for country folk, depending on a person's makeup, okay, you know, I like some space here. Verse 16, there's no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Chapter 5, verse 1, keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God. It's interesting you write it like that. Kind of like the common saying, open mouth, insert foot. And be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools. Well, what's the sacrifice of fools? Talking too quick. For they consider not that they do evil, be not rash with thy mouth. Not diaper rash, but mouth rash. Okay? Be not rash with thy mouth. And let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. Now this is, you know, speaking in the house of God, being careful what you say, being slow what you say. And I noticed this, you know, I noticed that when Gene Zimmer was around, whenever anybody else would be talking, he'd just be sitting there listening, and he would show no reaction. None whatsoever. I mean, when I'd be teaching the Bible, you know, you'd see a smile on somebody's face here, something here, and Gene would just sit there and look at you, think through it, and I'm thinking, what is he thinking? If he'd tell a good one, he'd laugh about it. But most of the time, he just wouldn't respond. You couldn't get a response out of him. And why? Because he's thinking. And he's very slow. When he says something, he wants to make sure it's something that's important, and he believes it. Verse 2, be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God, for God is in heaven, and thou upon earth, therefore let thy words be few. Now obviously there's a balance in life. In Proverbs it says, he that heareth speaketh constantly. Now the idea of heareth there is he that heareth from God speaketh constantly. And remember, a mark of preaching is an example of foolishness. And a preacher is like a fool for Christ's sake because he has to talk for Christ. Okay, but so there's a balance in life. There's a time to be quiet and there's a time to speak. Sometimes silence is golden, but sometimes silence is yellow. And so a person just, you know, you got to ask the Lord to help you when you should speak up and ask the Lord to help you when you should shut up. And there's times for both. Several years ago, a fellow down in Rensselaer, you know, he was being goofy, drinking, taking, you know, sleeping pills. And, you know, and wife called me up, soon to be his ex-wife. And she's all hysterical, and so he's taking all these sleeping pills. He's going to die and commit suicide and blah, blah, blah. You need to get over here. So I get over there, and I'm walking up these steps, and I'm saying, Lord, what do I say? What do I say? What do I say? Go in a house, and I'm asking, Lord, what do I say? And you talk about a blank in the head. Just blank, nothing. So I just sat there and didn't say anything. Just looked at him. Then a neighbor lady comes in, and she's just hysterical. Oh, you can't die. Oh, you can't die. And I'm sitting there saying, shut up and get out of here. All this guy's doing is wanting attention. That's all he's doing. And all he did was he slept longer than usual. You see, and it's people just run their mouth. It's not what you say most of the time. Like when people are going through tough times, it's not what you say to people. It's that you're there with them. Now, there are times that you want to make sure that the words that you express are biblical and are right. Okay? And that's where you just got to wait on God and ask Him to help you. So, verse 3, for a dream cometh through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. Okay, a dream, a desire, a goal. How are you going to get that? You got to work at it. You got to work at it hard. You got to work at it long. A dream cometh through a multitude of business, but then he's back on this subject about a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. Again, a multitude of words is like Oprah Winfrey. Or what's them four or five cackling women around a table? The View. A bunch of idiots. You know, that's just a bunch of fools talking to each other. Okay, and a lot of these talk, Jerry Springer, a bunch of fools. You see, these people just yakking. Now, Limbaugh talks all the time, but you know, that guy's got some substance to his words. But he's also got some problems with being truly a conservative and being truly patriotic. But yet, he does have substance, and I'm always glad somebody's going to, you know, harangue and harass the, you know, the liberals. I heard what he said today, and that's pretty, I thought it was pretty good what he said today. How you make a conservative mad is you tell him a lie. How you make a liberal mad is you tell him the truth. Now that's pretty good. You think about that. And you can do the same as far as the Christian faith. You know, you tell somebody who's a Bible believer, you want to get them mad, tell them a lie, and all the rest, tell them the truth, and they'll get mad at you. And so in verse 3, he's known by a multitude of words. Okay, verse 4, when thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it. For he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. Okay, now in our culture, if you would look in Numbers chapter 30. Now, public officials are supposed to take a vow, an oath. They're supposed to sign that oath. And they're supposed to secure that oath or insure that oath with a bond. And if they violate that oath, then that bond, something we need to learn to do, needs to be arrested. Okay, and this where this comes from is Numbers chapter 30, verse 2. Now, if they don't want to abide by their oath, then don't make the oath. But make sure that you accept the oath for its value, and then return it for its full credit. Verse 2, if a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. Okay, that's a man. Now a woman. If a woman also vow a vow unto the Lord and bind herself with a bond, being in her father's house in her youth, and her father hear her vow and her bond, wherewith she hath bound her soul, and her father shall hold his peace at her, then all her vows shall stand. And every bond wherewith she hath bound her soul shall stand. But if her father disallow her in the day that he heareth, not any of your vows or of her bonds wherewith she hath bound her soul shall stand, and the Lord shall forgive her because her father disallowed her. That's a protection for her. The same goes with a wife on that. Okay, an example of that is in 1 Samuel chapter 1, Hannah makes a vow, and her husband remained silent about it, and the vow was in force then. So we make a vow, make a promise. In the New Testament, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. Okay, that's up to verse 5. We'll stop there. Okay, any questions or comments that we covered? Anybody have any prayer requests?